Welcome to this edition of the Evan Roberts Podcast. This is not a podcast I ever thought we would do on July 9, 10, 11, and that is a Brooklyn Nets restart edition of the Evan Roberts Podcast, because the Brooklyn Nets season is scheduled to resume, just like the rest of the NBA. And joining me right now, a guy who's been on this podcast many times before, pre-Kevin Durant, during Kevin Durant, after Kevin Durant. I think the last one we did was actually talking about Kevin Durant coming back for this Disney extravaganza, and have things changed. This is the producer of the Zach Gelb Show. He used to produce Mark Malusis and Taz on the CBS Sports Network, and he's just a big superstar with his very own podcast that I do find very much enjoyable, that I will ask you to promote at some point. Actually, I'll ask you to promote it now, and that's Mike Bisseglia. And Mike, tell the world about the beauty of your delivery podcast.
Thank you, Evan. I do appreciate that. Thank you for having me on your podcast. Yes, the podcast is Mike Delivers. And on the side, I became an Uber Eats driver. And I decided to document my stories on the road as an Uber Eats driver. I'll talk about what happens when people are coming out in their underwear, running into celebrities. And then the podcast has kind of evolved where my wife and I now do food reviews of Uber Eats delivered to us. And then I like to interview different people, different celebrities and people in the food world, basically about food and delivery. So it's a lot of food related.
This is what makes you great, because when you think about it, this podcast that I do takes zero creativity. I mean, think about it. It's basically the garbage I didn't get to on the air, or the things that people wouldn't want to hear me talk about on the air, such as 45 straight minutes of Brooklyn Nets stuff or pro wrestling. So the podcast I do, it's just me talking. Your podcast is different and creative, and I commend you for that.
Well, thank you very much, Evan. And no, you're not just spewing garbage. It takes a lot of talent to put a podcast together, so don't say that.
All right.
But yes, I did want to do something different.
Well, let's get to this. So when we were talking about a month and a half ago, we were daydreaming about Kevin Durant coming back, about Kyrie Irving coming back, figuring, hey, they've probably recovered. Why not compete in the bubble? Now, that went away quickly. Kevin does his interview, says, I'm not playing. We don't even hear anything from Kyrie Irving other than the rumor that he wants to start his own league. You know, other than that.
That was great.
But what's happened over the last few weeks, some of it related to COVID, some not. For example, Nicholas Claxton is hurt, so he's out for the NBA restart. DeAndre Jordan, I mean, he did test positive for COVID, but it also sounded like he was going to opt out anyway. Wilson Chandler opts out. Dorian Prince, who was the last blow that we heard a couple of days ago, positive for COVID. And Spencer Dinwiddie tested positive for COVID. But with Spencer, it seemed like, hey, if I feel better and I can get a couple of negative tests, I'll go down to Orlando and I'll play. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. So that is a list of seven guys. I mean, it's
crazy.
What's your reaction to all of this? The fact that seven guys, and a lot of those guys, I mean, you could dismiss Durant, say he didn't play on the team. Spencer Dinwiddie is as valuable a piece to this current Net team as anybody. Torian Prince was up and down, but the guy played big minutes. What's your reaction to all this?
I mean, it almost just became comical at the very end of it when you've lost so many key role players and so many key established guys that are starters off the bench. I mean, when we first started talking about this, even without Durant and Kyrie, we had this idea in our head like, okay, let's say the Nets are the seventh seed. They can go ahead and let's play the Toronto Raptors. There's no more home court. It's this weird bubble situation where we believe like this might even out the playing field. I'm not thinking the Nets are going to go and beat the Raptors, but I feel a little more comfortable with the Nets playing Toronto, where they don't have to worry about going into Toronto and dealing with that crowd and everything. So there's a little more juice and excitement of, you know, maybe the Nets can have some fun here. We'll see what happens. Maybe they can sneak past Toronto, win a round, whatever. But then when you start to hear where pretty much every key contributor is not coming to the bubble, your mind slowly shifts to, okay, well, this will be interesting. It's going to be a lot of Caris LeVert and Jared Allen and Joe Harris shooting a lot of shots, and that's the team. I mean, that's where your mind goes.
It's crazy. It's so funny how in our fantasies, we went from, hey, what would it feel like if they win an NBA title down at Disney World because Durant's going to play and Kyrie's going to play to this team. I don't even know if it's the team that we watched all year, considering Tyler Johnson's here now.
Yep.
Jamal Crawford is here now. Michael Beasley's here now. Dante Hall is here now. But before I get to this roster, our expectations, and really what we think this team can do, the idea of tanking has been very popular on Twitter, and I don't know how you have always felt about this, and I know that tanking hasn't been something we've understood over the last few years because we haven't had picks. So what the hell are we tanking for? We're tanking for what? So Boston can get a big pick? Even with picks, I've never been a big fan of tanking, especially because of the NBA lottery odds and the fact that it doesn't guarantee you anything. I've heard a lot of Net fans talk about, hey, we're better off not making the playoffs because you're not tanking to win the lottery. You're tanking to keep a pick. Obviously, the Nets traded a first-round pick in the Allen Crabb trade, but it's got lottery protections on it, something Billy King didn't know existed. And so if they miss the playoffs, it's not, hey, they got a chance to win a lottery. It's they get to keep a first-round pick. And I don't know how you normally feel about it and how you feel about it now, but yeah, ideally, knowing this roster, ideally they miss the playoffs. Ideally they get to keep that first round pick. That certainly serves as a bigger benefit than making the playoffs with this roster. Do you feel that way? Because this is the first time I've ever felt that way where, yeah, I know they're better off missing the playoffs.
Yeah, this I agree with you. This is the first time it ever crept in my head. Under normal circumstances, no way. Let's go out and compete. Maybe they can beat Toronto, get a couple of wins. It's all good. Now, I get when the games start, I'm not going to watch, and all of a sudden, Michael Beasley's dropping 25 and 15, and I'm like, okay, maybe I'm in on this. And I know my natural instincts will be to watch them and make sure that I want them to win. There's no way I'm going to root for them to lose. It's just not humanly possible in me once the games are on. But, I mean, the truth of the matter is, in this circumstance, with a team that has no chance of winning an NBA championship, why not get the pick, get in the lottery, and just see what the hell happens? I mean, because we know this team is being built for next season.
Right.
It was originally, but now it's obviously clear what the hell's going on. Like, why not get the pick?
Here's the dilemma I'm facing, because I can't debate that the Nets aren't better off missing the playoffs. They are. I mean, it's obvious. The experience that they'd gain in playing in a postseason that I don't even know if it's going to feel like a postseason considering the environment is not worth legitimately keeping a first-round pick that maybe you use in some kind of big trade to add depth or add a third superstar. The problem with the tank crowd is that it's unrealistic. Like, and I'm not joking here because I've looked at this schedule that the Wizards have. I know the Nets schedule. If you are taking the notion the Nets can go 0-8. And I don't think they would go 0-8, but let's just say they did, you know, for the sake of this discussion.
Right.
They're going to go 0-8. They're going to lose to every team they play, including the Orlando Magic twice, and including the Wizards themselves, who don't have Bradley Beal, obviously don't have John Wall. Bertans is not there either.
Right.
For the Nets to even be then in the play-in tournament, where they'd have to lose twice more to the Wizards. So even if they go 0-8, and somehow get to the play-in, that involves losing twice to the Wizards. Not once, but twice. You would need the Wizards to go out and win two games. Mm. And I look at their schedule, and okay, they beat the Nets because we just have the Nets going 0-8. Are they beating the Bucks or the Celtics or the Thunder or the 76ers? Or, like,
no.
It's not realistic to tank. So the argument that I see of, well, they're better off keeping their pick. Okay, fine, you're right. They're better off keeping their pick. Even if Sean Marks told his guys, don't play, just literally go on the court, drop your pants, don't even shoot shots, like, you know, use a bowel movement on the court. Like, it doesn't matter. There is still a really good chance that the Wizards don't win enough games to force this play-in, and so the tank becomes irrelevant.
I know. It's almost impossible considering the circumstance of how the league set it up, the numerical values of the games that are left and how bad and putrid the Wizards are. And then you laid it out perfectly. They're missing all their good players. So they're in a similar spot that the Nets are. No Beal, no Bertans. Like, how are they going to possibly win basketball games? It just seems highly impossible. So, I mean, for the Nets, like I said, it's a pipe dream and it sounds nice. Like, hey, they go here, they tank and everything magically works in that circumstance and they get an extra draft pick. But you're absolutely right. It's just not going to happen. I mean, the Nets are going to go here. I just don't know what the hell this team's going to look like. Maybe they'll surprise us and these guys will play well and they'll be motivated. And just the bizarre circumstance of what this situation is, maybe they'll actually surprise us and win some games and, the, I don't know, sneak to this next second round or get a win versus Toronto. I mean, but the truth of the matter is they're probably going to end up playing Milwaukee.
Right.
And it's going to be an utter disaster. I mean, yeah. It's, you know what? It's going to be Jamal Crawford goes out and scores 30 and they lose by 28 and Giannis played 26 minutes. I mean, that's what it's going to be.
Well, look, there are a lot of reasons why this basketball team is not going to be able to compete against the Milwaukee Bucks or the Toronto Raptors. And one of the things that jumps out at me is they're just not going to have size. I mean, Jared Allen is the one true big on this roster. And unless things change from the time we're recording this and there are changes of thoughts, I mean, Dante Hall, who I'm not even that familiar with, I did some research on him, and it's kind of funny. I YouTube Dante Hall. Right. And the first video that popped up was a Piston fan recording a YouTube video complaining about the fact that the Pistons didn't keep him because he played really well in the G League. He put up some big numbers in the G League. And so that kind of inspired confidence. I'm watching this Detroit Piston fan, you know, with four views talking about how good Dante Hall is and what a great move by the Nets it was.
He's the next Dinwiddie move, you know, from Detroit.
Look, man, that's the hope, and I want to lead to that because when they started losing these guys, we knew, okay, they can sign replacements. And I mentioned this on the air. There's no science to this. There's no perfect answer to what the strategy should be. But my gut told me, get me Dante Halls. Get me the next diamond in the rough that Sean Marks finds, because I don't know how realistic, and I like Jamal Crawford. I think he's had a hell of an NBA career, sixth man of the year three times, and like you said, could drop 35 at any moment, and I wouldn't be surprised if he had a couple of big offensive games. He's 40 years old. Right. I mean, is there really a role for Jamal Crawford on next year's Brooklyn Nets? And I think I was looking at, hey, anybody that I bring in, even if it's remote that they're going to be on next year's team, I'd like to see it more as an audition for next year's team. Yeah, they can help you maybe win a couple of games here, but it's about next year. Is there any way Jamal Crawford is on next year's Brooklyn Nets?
I mean, if Kevin Durant wants him there, there might be a little bit of like, let's see if we can find some role players for next season. And I understand that Crawford's 40, so that makes it kind of a weird one to say out loud. But I certainly think there's something to it that they're looking at these guys as possibly an audition for the, you know, 10th, the Wilson Chandlers of the world that are on this team next year. I mean, I personally am like, I'm looking forward as a like diehard Nets fan to see Chris Chioza and see what he looks like on the court. Is this a guy that could potentially be a nice backup? Did they find something here in this kid? Because he was playing so well.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh,
those
he
last
was.
Couple games, that Celtic game, the Laker game, those two big net wins that happened before everything stopped. He was proven to be like one of those Sean Marks guys that came out of nowhere and started to play well. I mean, from a standpoint of, oh, I'm excited, I want to see guys develop, I think it's a little weird that they signed Beasley and Crawford. But from a pure standpoint of, this is ridiculous, I know they can't win anyway, it's going to be highly entertaining just to see what it looks like when, like, Michael Beasley's passing to Joe Harris. I mean, like, the whole thought of it is just bizarre. So from that standpoint, at least I'm like, this will be entertaining. But from a future standpoint, it does seem a little strange unless they think these guys could potentially be with this roster moving forward and they put their title team together, hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, the it's tough not to connect Beasley as being friends with Kevin Durant. I know Sean Marks denied that, and you know he's going to deny a lot of that stuff, but he knows that Kevin Durant is high on Michael Beasley. And considering Beasley has to sit out the first five games of this thing, which, I mean, look, the reason why it's not the worst thing in the world with the five-game suspension, it sounds worse than the reality. As we discussed earlier, the Nets are going to be in the playoffs, okay? Right. They're probably playing Milwaukee, which is what we wanted to avoid the entire time, but they're going to be in the playoffs. So if he's missing the first five games, he's got three games plus the entire postseason. And that's really what you're signing him for, because those eight games, which we looked at a few weeks ago as, hey, these are huge games. They're a half game ahead of Orlando. Playing Toronto just gives you a better shot than playing Milwaukee. I think both of us are sitting here saying, come on, the Magic will win more games than the Nets. They play them twice. The Nets are going to be the 8 seed with the roster that they have. And so that's why I think the Beasley thing, not that I'm high on them signing Michael Beasley, but the 5-game suspension part isn't that crazy considering he's getting at least 7 games with this team, the 3 games after the suspension, and then at least 4 games for the postseason.
Yeah, exactly. And remember when we were having these pipe dreams of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and it ended up just being Jamal Crawford and Michael Beasley. We were just off. We missed that. We should have seen it with these guys.
Yeah. Well, look, that part wasn't the shocking part. And obviously, you know, with this virus, anybody could get it and it could have knocked anybody out.
Sure.
But I didn't expect Spencer Dinwiddie, DeAndre Jordan, Torian Prince, Wilson. I didn't expect the list of no-shows for a variety of reasons to be 7 guys. But I'm looking at the depth chart, or I'm thinking about the depth chart. To me, Caris LeVert's the point guard. I mean, I guess Chris Chioza is well, and he has played well, and you want to see a look at him. And Tyler Johnson, I guess, could play the point. But the ball is going to be in the hands of Caris LeVert.
Oh, yeah.
But then it goes to, but you don't want to play him 40 minutes a night. I mean, you've got to be careful with Caris. He still has an injury history. Basically, he hasn't gotten through a full season for the most part. We remember this year, I know it was a finger injury, but he missed a big bulk of time. Mm-hmm. So I think they got to be smart with Caris. Even though the offense is going to run through him, you can't exert him in a way that risks an injury during the month of August. Can't have it happen.
Yeah, and if we've seen anything from this team and their philosophy, they don't like to overexert guys. We saw a lot of it, obviously, last year with D'Angelo Russell and the minutes restrictions that he was on under 30 minutes every on an average for the season. So I would be stunned if they're putting him out there and they're playing him in a 36 to 42 minute range, considering they know the deal. They know what's going on here. And they want to see Caris play well. They want to see him develop. I mean, looking at this team, the things you want to see is you want to see Jared Allen take a step in this bubble, whatever it is. Caris LeVert continue to play well. You know, I think Joe Harris is going to be solid. But you see some of these younger players just try to get a little bit better. Or, I mean, because I don't know what this chemistry is going to look like. They're all there now. They're in Orlando, and they're all just like, hi, my name is. Like getting to know each other. So to build chemistry when you have to be socially distant, it's the whole thing seems impossible.
But here's my question about the chemistry part. So we know that Sean Marks always had, you know, a hard on for Tyler Johnson. I mean, he gave him that huge contract a couple of years ago. Luckily, Miami matched it. Nets never signed Tyler Johnson. He's new, right? So you have to develop chemistry with Tyler Johnson. Same thing with Jamal Crawford. Same thing with Michael Beasley. Same thing for Dante Hall. But I'm not convinced that all of those guys are playing big minutes. Even a guy like Jamal. I mean, I know that we believe he's capable offensively of doing something big in one big moment, but I don't know if Jamal Crawford at age 40, who hasn't played this year, is all of a sudden playing 30 minutes a night. Not when you still have Garrett Temple, not still when you have Chris Chioza, who we've talked about, and Caris LeVert and TLC. Can't forget those guys, Timothy Luwabo-Cabarrot and Joe Harris. There's chemistry between those guys. I mean, these units now, they haven't played huge minutes together because Spencer Dinwiddie was on the court a lot of the time. When Kyrie was out there, he was on the court a lot of the time. But when you bring up chemistry, I just wonder how many minutes Johnson, Crawford, Beasley, how many minutes these guys are really going to play, and if Jacques Vaughn leans more towards Chioza, LeVert, Harris, TLC, Musa, Rodions, and obviously Jared Allen. I'm thinking there's going to be a lot more of that.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I just have this weird feeling, and like I can see it now, like Jamal Crawford in the game, crunch time, 6 minutes left, and he is there. But if they're going to spread out the minutes and make sure, like, for example, that Caris doesn't get burned out, you know, Tyler Johnson's going to have to play 18 to 20 minutes. We're going to have to see Jamal Crawford on there. And just by the pure sense of, this is going to be conditioning issues, I would think. I wouldn't be surprised if they went to a deeper roster because these guys haven't played competitive basketball in 4 months, and now they're going to be asked to be sprinting up and down a court. And, you know, I don't know exactly the Nets, how many, the 8 games, how many days it's stretched out, but it's probably at first going to be like a big shock to the system when they're playing these games. I wouldn't be stunned if they need to go to a deeper bench and play guys that you maybe normally wouldn't have seen in a regular season game in a regular circumstance.
So I know this doesn't equate to baseball at all, but one thing that surprised me so far about baseball is how these starting pitchers are ready. I mean, Jacob DeGrom and Gerrit Cole on opening day are going to be able to go seven innings, or at least 95 pitches, 100 pitches. I wonder with a lot of these guys, and you're right, it's not game action, but pitching isn't game action either, if because they've been able to work out, some of them have, that between the workouts down in Orlando now, between what they whatever they were doing during the quarantine, between the preseason games, because they are going to have scrimmages. I think the Nets have two or three scrimmages that are scheduled. One of them may even be televised, which is going to be crazy to watch that.
Yeah.
And the way it's spread out these games is basically 2 weeks. They start their regular season on July 31st. They ended on August 13th. They started on a Friday. They ended 2 weeks later. So it's 14 days to play the eight games, which I guess is really squished together the more you think about it.
Yeah, every other night and some back-to-backs.
There's one back-to-back. The way it works out is they play on Friday the 31st against the Magic, Sunday the 2nd against the Wizards. So what a big two games to start this thing off if you're thinking about seeding or whatnot.
Yeah.
Then listen to this back-to-back. Tuesday, August 4th against the Bucks, Wednesday, August 5th against the Celtics.
Oh, well, maybe the Bucks. What do the Bucks have? 6.5 up on Toronto. I mean, they're essentially
the Bucks are playing for nothing.
Yeah, so they might. But at the same time, I would say like, oh, the Bucks need to rest people. But then at the same time, they haven't played together in 4 months. They probably want the reps of playing.
Here's the part where, as much as I think, as we mentioned before, the Nets are going to go in. Maybe they'll win one or two regular season games, and they're going to get wiped out. The part that makes me pause, not that they're going on a run. I'm not trying to sell you they're going on a run. Mm-hmm. But it's the unknown. It's the fact that what you talked about with the Bucks, that, you know, Chris Middleton made a comment a couple of days ago. He didn't pick up a basketball during the quarantine. That is a frightening thought. And with a lot of individual players, we don't know what they've been able to do. I mean, some guys may have been able to go to the gym every single day. They're working out, and they are just better prepared for the start of this season than other guys. And you just don't know. And I think that's the part of me that's either talking myself into being excited about it or just reminding myself that as much as we think we know about what's going to happen down at Disney World as far as the game action, you don't. And look, I don't think the Nets are going on a run and winning an NBA championship, though that would be freaking hilarious if Tyler Johnson and Chris Chiosa were it would be
amazing.
But there is a lot of unknown to this, and I think that if they go out, they're playing the Magic that first game. We're so excited basketball's back. If the Nets are up by 10 starting the fourth quarter, we're going to be giddy. We're gonna be saying, wait a second, we got something here with these guys. We're going to get the 7 seed. We're going to avoid the Bucks. Oh. I mean, Rodion Skrouts even said the other day, now, I don't think he knew at the time then when he wasn't there, but he said, yeah, we could beat the Raptors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I think we're going to end up talking ourselves into thinking, holy crap, anything can happen.
I think this is going to be broader than the Nets with this.
Sure.
I think this is going to be there are going to be upsets all over the place, and it's going to be chaos. And it's going to be very different than anything we have ever seen before. Obviously, I'm not a breakthrough here. But I think we're going to see teams losing left and right. You're going to be shocked. All of a sudden, like, the Lakers lose game one. I think it's just going to be a mess. And in a fun, chaotic way, where there's going to be upsets all over the place. I mean, I don't think people realize, like, how big of a deal some of these home courts are. Like, Toronto, Utah. I mean, that is a massive difference. Or, for example, let's say the Lakers and Clippers end up playing each other in the Western Conference Finals. Like, that would have been 7 home games for the Lakers. Like, that's gone.
I know.
That's gone. So that evens out. And I just think we're going to see guys that normally aren't stars all of a sudden becoming stars, superstars that can't find themselves and look like guys that we've never that way worse than they are. I think it's going to be chaos. It's going to be fun. And, you know, don't be surprised if you're seeing, like, all of a sudden the Sixers make a huge run and Simmons and Embiid get it together because they're ultra-talented players and they figure it out in this bubble life.
Yeah.
I'm expecting it to be nuts. I really am.
Yeah, no, and I think that's the disappointing part, that we could have been a more serious part of the nuts if this team was there. I'm trying to figure out, like, what I'm, besides, you know, a miracle run and winning games, what I'm looking for. Because Caris LeVert playing out of his mind, I'd be excited about, but then there'd be a part of me saying, well, how's he going to play with the other stars? Like, that's the part of LeVert that we need to see, and there's no guarantee he's going to be on the team. I mean, I think it's obvious that Sean Marks is going to be looking for a third star. I asked him directly when he was on last week, and I don't know. I feel sometimes Sean Marks doesn't give an answer, but he gives an answer. Like, he doesn't specifically tell you what the answer is, but there are ways he says things that make you think he's implying an answer. So when we brought up, actually Joe brought it up about tanking, you know, for the draft pick, Sean Marks basically said what I said about how it's impossible. Like, the first thing he said is, well, the analytics. Yeah, the analytics say the Wizards suck. There's no way we're bad enough. We can't lose every game, and we're still going to make the playoffs. And I think he essentially said that without saying that. Mm-hmm. I asked him about Greg Popovich, and the reason why I really don't believe Popovich is going to coach now is he made a comment how Pop owes it to the Spurs. And I was like, whoa. That's a little bit stronger than, you know, he's a great guy, you know, but he has
a
job, we'll see.
Yeah.
So I kind of took that as, ooh. And when I asked him about a third star or depth, I did get a third star impression from him. And Caris LeVert would be the guy to go, let's be honest. Whether it's Bradley Beal or another third star we're not thinking about, LeVert would go. But I also don't want to, what he does in Orlando, even if he dominates and plays at a high level, is not what his role is next year. So I want him to play well. I'd love to see him put up big numbers, but I think we have to remind ourselves that that's not what he's going to be next year next to Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, and Spencer Dinwiddie.
Yeah, I get scared then because I do like Caris, but let's say he does has a great NBA bubble and he's putting up 27 a game and he leads the Nets to some surprise wins. I mean, all maybe he's doing is just increasing his trade value so that they can get a guy like Bradley Beal. Because you're right, if they're going to go out and trade for a third star, the other team's going to want something in return. And the Nets have a nice asset and a nice piece and a nice chip in Caris LeVert. So that would scare me. And I, you know, it's so hard to piece together because, first of all, hopefully Kyrie and Kevin can be healthy next year.
Well, yeah.
But playing with those guys, you're right, it's just so different than going out and getting your own shot and Joe Harris standing on the wing and Garrett Temple standing on the wing. And, all right, Caris, go do something for us. That with, you know, Kyrie's going to be dominating the ball. I assume Kevin Durant's going to be dominating the ball. I have no idea in my head what it looks like when Caris LeVert is the third guy there. Also, just saying these names out loud, you realize just the amount of dudes that are not playing. When you're like, hey, we could add a Kyrie Irving, add a Kevin Durant, a DeAndre Jordan, Spencer Dinwiddie. So point is, though, you're right. I just adding Caris to that mix, I don't even have any idea of a comprehension. All I do know is that when Caris was with Kyrie, granted, it's a long time ago now, it felt like it didn't mesh when we saw them together on the court
They just didn't play enough. I mean, that's why this whole thing is so frustrating a year after signing these guys. We haven't seen enough. You know,
we learned nothing.
What did we learn? We learned that Kyrie Irving is still injury prone. That's what we learned. Mm-hmm. I mean, unfortunately, he only played 20 games this year. And if they played a full 82, it was only going to be 20 games. So it's not as if the shortened season impacted that. I mean, the guys that jump out at me, number one is Jared Allen, because Jared Allen, I'm not thinking they're going to play him 35 minutes a night, kind of the reason you gave earlier that you got to be smart with these guys. But he's truly the only big on this roster. So I think seeing Jared Allen in that role where DeAndre Jordan's not coming in to replace him after 6 minutes because he ran into foul trouble, I think watching him, I'm going to be curious about. And also the return of Rodions Karutz, because he really lost himself this year and he lost his kind of role on this basketball team. Right now, if I'm making a starting five, Rodions is my stretch four. I'm starting him at the four right now. I mean, what are my other options? So I think Karutz is going to be an interesting guy to watch. TLC a little bit, Musa a little bit. But I don't know how much I can gain from what we see down there, especially because, like you talked about, it's just such a weird environment. It's everything about it is strange. And then the coach. I mean, can we really evaluate Jacques Vaughn based on what this team does in the bubble?
No, I mean, the roster he's handed is so different. It's, I don't know what you could take away from watching him coach this team that will help you with the guys that are there, because we know who's making the hire and they're not playing anyway. They're not there, so they can't talk about what Jacques's doing in and out of the huddle. So you can't get any perspective on what, you know, GM Kevin Durant wants when Jacques, he's not even there with Jacques. And then alluding to the Jared Allen stuff, it will be interesting without DeAndre, and I don't want to say like down, you know, breathing down his neck, but this is him as the center for, these are his minutes. And he had such a weird season. It was such an up and down season from like not good to start to then a guy that's putting up 20 and 20s and looking great. And then, you know, other teams figured out how to stop the pick and roll. And all of a sudden he went back to early Jared Allen. So which Jared Allen we will see is one of the things I'll be looking forward to seeing in his development and hopefully growth here in the NBA bubble.
Do you think Jacques Vaughn's going to get this job long term, though?
Probably not. I would be completely stunned, but I would at least say there's got to be some form of a chance. I mean, I'm trying to like convince myself in the moment to say that, but at least if the guy's going to be coaching there, maybe it's the heart inside of me that says you can't just put somebody to have a job for 2 months in an Orlando bubble and it means absolutely nothing. So I think there's got to be some morsel of some respect to that. Probably not, but at least I give him some form of a chance, because the human decency inside of me says if he's going to be the coach in Orlando now, even though Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving don't have aren't playing, and you know they're the ones that are the ultimate probably decision makers, the good in me says that Jacques Vaughn has to have at least a little bit of a chance, because I don't know, like we're all people here, and you got to just at least give some respect to the fact that, you know, he's a guy that was a guard in the NBA. He's been a former head coach. Yeah. Like, there's got to be a little bit of respect there. So to give him at least a morsel of a chance.
Listen, I have no issues with Jacques Vaughn. I really don't. I can't even judge his past head coaching resume. He didn't have much of a roster down there.
Sure.
I just would be really, really surprised if he got this job. Now, it's not that I think Greg Popovich is getting the job. I mean, that's the fantasy, and we may as well all dream about it. I mean, who thought a year ago that this team would end up with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving?
Right.
I still think it's going to end up being Ty Lue. But, you know, the more I think about this, and obviously the Nets aren't going on any kind of run, you know, probably 98% sure they're not going on a run, but it's going to be a lot of fun. I mean,
Yeah. They're
playing games during the week. They're playing games during the day. It's gonna be such a weird feeling, but it's kind of cool. Like Friday afternoon, Brooklyn Net basketball during August. Who would have ever thought that was ever gonna happen?
I know, I love it, and it's funny because it's gonna go from we've had no sports in our life, we've had nothing to watch in the last 3-4 months to an overload of sports where it's on all the time, nonstop action. Nets Raptors at 2 o'clock, followed by Rockets Thunder at 4 o'clock, and then you get to watch, you know, Mets versus the Mets versus the Phillies. I mean, it's gonna be nonstop fun. It's gonna be the opposite of, all right, here we go. Let's watch a rerun of the Nets versus Celtics 2002 to, you know, actual basketball, which will be really cool.
I know, which I did a lot of during this quarantine. I watched a lot of old games. If you had to predict, they're playing 8 regular season games. And by the way, it's so different than what hockey's doing. And the more I've thought about it, the more I like what the NBA is doing. And I'll tell you why. In the NHL, like, yeah, the Islanders and Rangers are right in the playoffs, but they're in a best-of-5 series right out of the gate,
right,
which means it's possible the Islanders play 3 games, lose all 3, and they're done.
Yeah, I know.
At least with the Nets, we got 8 regular season games. And if we're both accepting the fact that they're probably not getting the 7th seed, and they're probably not falling enough to be in the play-in game, then it's just 8 games to kind of tune yourself up for the playoffs. So there's more time to at least smell the roses in watching the Nets than there would be with the Islanders or the Rangers, where it's like immediately, boom, it's do or die game. So there is something sort of fun knowing, hey, when the Nets play the Kings on August 7th, yeah, there's something on the line. The games are big in terms of seeding, but you know, your season isn't on the line. You're not going to, in all likelihood, barring a wizard run, you're not going to be eliminated necessarily.
And that would scare me if I was a big hockey fan who had a team that was like a 1, 2, or 3 seed, that you could go in and know that your team could be eliminated that fast. That would terrify me, and that would really make me scared.
Well, secondly, you are clearly showing you're not a hockey fan, because the top four seeds are not in that situation.
Oh.
It's okay, though.
No, what I wanted to do was I wanted to challenge the hockey fans and say, really know hockey, you know I'm full of shit. That would scare me. Like, I'm the number one seed and I could be gone in three games. That would terrify me. Okay, good to know that hockey didn't make that kind of mistake.
No, it's weird. Hockey and basketball are so similar in terms of, hey, similar amount of teams, same amount of teams make the playoffs.
Right.
Yet they really did have to have a different playoff structure. They did have to have a different idea of how to go about things. And the more I think about it, I love what the NBA did, because I was always a fan of regular season games. I thought it was crazy to send these guys down to Disney World and say, boom, the playoffs start right away.
Yeah.
Now you're giving them a couple of preseason games, but then two weeks of regular season games. And for most of these teams, these games are not big deals. I mean, the LA Lakers are going to be the one seed. The Bucks are going to be the one seed. And even if you're battling for seeding, I'm not talking about making the playoffs
right,
the way the Grizzlies are, or even the Nets are technically.
Sure.
But the seeds don't even matter that much, because there is no such thing as home court advantage. So it really is eight games to kind of tune yourself up for the postseason. And maybe that makes it likelier that the better teams advance, because you're giving them more time to get the rust
off. Did you like the idea when the NBA went with, the home court team, because there's no home court advantage, got to sleep in king size beds, got to, get the nice meals, nice cuisines, just something to give a home court, because you're right. There's no home court. It's just go at it.
In all seriousness, I'm in favor of nothing for home court except for one thing I'd be okay
with. What's that?
Here's the one minor game adjustment where I'd say, okay, this is fair. You give the home team possession of the basketball to begin each quarter. So instead of a jump ball to start the game, and then instead of course alternating, like if you win the jump ball, then you get it in the fourth quarter,
right,
second and third for the other team, I would say, all right, I'm going to give you a couple of freebie extra possessions. And it could be a big deal. I mean, the whole grand scheme of things, you are giving that team extra possessions. Outside of that, I wouldn't have touched it. You know, I wouldn't have said you can foul a guy out.
Sure.
You know, you can have a guy commit. I think that's changing the game way more than basically giving another team a possession. But the way I understand it is, even though you look at the Nets schedule and they've got four home games and four road games, there really isn't any difference. Like, they're at Milwaukee,
sure,
but they're not.
Right.
I mean, there's no discernible right, difference between at Milwaukee and home against the Kings. So it is what it is. I don't have an issue. I think we can all kind of embrace the fact that it's just neutral sites.
That'll be funny, because it'll be some teams like, oh, wow, this team is, you know, when they always say, the playoffs don't start until a team can win on the road. You can't
right,
you can't say that stupid claim anymore. It's all
no,
the same.
I know. It's like if when the Nets stole game one against Philly last year, and we're all excited, like, oh, now we got at least a split in Philly.
Right.
You really can't take that approach.
No.
I mean, you have to look at it as you've got to find a way to win four of seven against a team that's far better than you. And whether you win game one or not, it doesn't have that same effect as when you win a game one on the road.
No.
You kind of lose that.
Exactly.
Bit.
No, it's all those like funny cliche playoffs. And but it actually brings up an interesting point, because a lot of times, like, for example, the Nets in game two, which we went to, kind of let their guard down in the third quarter and they got blown out. A lot of teams kind of relax and rest because they know they got their split. It'll be interesting to see if teams have that approach, considering that home court's gone, and maybe they'll just kind of go forward because they got to win four games and can't take that idea of home court.
It's fascinating, because I really think that there is something to crowds and energy in the NBA more than there is in these other sports. And you kind of see it based on win-loss records. You know, in baseball, it's not that extreme. In hockey, it's not that extreme. In football, it sort of is. In basketball, a lot of this is the momentum and the energy of the crowd, and you're not really going to have that. So what impact that has as far as who advances and whatnot, I'm not sure of, but I'm excited. Even though I look at these eight regular season games, and if I had to make a prediction, like serious prediction, no screwing around, I give them a couple of games. Like, I think they'll win two games. I think they'll beat the Wizards, And I'll say they'll beat the Magic in one of the two games they play against them. Or maybe they'll beat the Kings. Bottom line is I think they go 2-6 and they avoid the play-in against the Wizards, because I don't know if the Wizards win any games, to be honest. So, but I think they're going to be the 8 seed. Like, I fully expect 2-6, no play-in, not the 7 seed, matched up against the Bucks, and then I'll probably say 4 or 5. Like, maybe they'll win a game, but I doubt it. So that's my prediction. 2 wins in the regular season, and then they lose to the Bucks pretty easily. What's your thought?
See, if it wasn't this chaos of a roster, I'd give them more wins, I guess. I just think everything's going to be so evened out. So I'll say they win 4 games, and let's have some fun. Let's have them playing Toronto, and then they take the Raptors to 6. I'm going to say that this thing is just such chaos and such nonsense that these rosters even themselves out, even though the Nets are like a third of the team is guys that weren't, you know, on the roster 3 months ago. Let's have some fun. Let's say the Nets split the 8. They end up playing the Raptors. They take Toronto to 6. They do a good job. You know, they split in Toronto, but they just can't hold the home court.
Right. You know, it's funny. They open against the Magic and the Wizards. Mm-hmm. Those are their first two games that they play, July 31st and August 2nd. If they beat the Magic with this roster to open up the bubble, I think we'd all be fired up, because now all of a sudden that would be a game and a half lead on the Magic. Right. You'd start to analyze the Magic schedule and say, well, they got to play the Raptors. They got to play the Celtics.
Yep.
You know, you'd start to think, wow, maybe they could escape with this thing and get a 7 seed. But I don't know. It's tough. I mean, especially when you look at the depth chart of what this team has. But it should be fun. We're going to get basketball back. And then when this whole thing is over, we get to the real important stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Who the permanent head coach is going to be, and really how aggressive Sean Marks is going to be in this offseason. Whether it's chasing a third star, whether it's trying to sign a guy like Serge Ibaka, which I don't know how they would be able to in the salary cap situation that they're in, but I guess there's a fantasy he'll take less money. Really what the approach is to this offseason. And then I guess we got to figure out, well, what the hell's next year going to look like? Because there's no guarantee they're going to be back in Brooklyn, and you know, who knows what everything looks like. But hey, we got exciting things to look at, and this was fun. So I appreciate you joining me here on this Brooklyn Nets Restart podcast here on the Evan Roberts podcast. There's a few more podcasts coming up that I plan on doing. The Me versus Ernie Mets Yankee bets I look forward to doing. We do that before every baseball season, and there is going to be baseball season, and there will be a baseball predictions podcast I look forward to doing as well. So thank you for downloading, and thank you for listening, and thank you, Mike Biseglia. Certainly check out his podcast, where he will tell you all about food delivery and the interesting stories that go along with it. What's it called again, by the way?
Mike Delivers.
Mike Delivers. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all good.
I gave it a big plug and I forgot. Mike Delivers. Download it and check it out.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to this edition of the Evan Roberts Podcast.